Thank you so much for joining us on WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we are following the story this evening. Two Chicago police officers have been hit by a train on the south side. South Shore trains were stopped in both directions. They were in pursuit of, they had been called for shots fired. And I know many people may remember in 2002 when Officer Perez was struck and killed by a train. And obviously, sad evening. We are all heartbroken as we are in the last weeks of 2018. These are the fourth officers to be shot, to be killed in the line of duty. Commander Bauer, Officer Jimenez, and now the two police officers who I know that have been identified, but I want to make sure that we have all the information that we need. But it was Officer Officer Conrad Gary, who was 31 years old, and Officer Eduardo Marmelejo, who was 37 years old. Gary had been on the force for 18 months. Marmolejo had been on for 2.5 years. Gary's the father of a young baby, and Marmolejo was the father of three. Both officers were married. This is coming from the Chicago Tribune. They were working as partners Monday night, and it's been a very hard year, of course, for the Chicago Police Department, and our hearts are broken this evening at this tragic loss. You know, when police officers go to work, they put on their uniforms, and they know that they are taking a chance. They do a job that most of us can't or won't do, and it's something that we are grateful for. And perhaps, again, this evening, we need to give thanks for all the hard work and the danger that they put themselves in. And if you have the opportunity, please express your condolences in any way you can, and keep them in your thoughts. These families and the families of so many officers, you know, are worried on nights like this. You know, when I saw the news break, I only had the headline that two officers had been struck and killed by a train on the south side. And I have friends on the police force. Many of us who work here are close to so many police officers, and your heart just stops. But whether or not we know them, we do know them, because they are the men and women who are in our neighborhoods every single day, trying to keep us safe, doing their job, and showing up and do it again, what most of us can't or won't do. And if you have any thoughts, of course, we would encourage you to call and share them. I know that many police officers, not only here in the Chicagoland area, but throughout the country, do listen to WGN Radio. If there are any thoughts you would like to share, we encourage you, because this is the kind of night when we get this news and we think just how fragile life is, how one moment to the next, you never know what's going to happen. And again, this was on the far south side. If you are just catching up with the news, two Chicago police officers were struck and killed by a South Shore line train and on the Chicago's south side. Superintendent Eddie Johnson has said that the officers were responding to a shot spotter alert near the tracks near 103rd Street and Cottage Grove, and they were giving chase to a suspect at about 6:30. While they were investigating, they were struck and killed by a passing train. And another holiday, another week where we think about those families who will have an empty chair at their holiday celebration. We will think about all the birthdays and celebrations in the years to come that will have that hole that will never be healed. And I hope that as a city, we continue to be there for the officers' families. Express how sad we are, and how much we need to continue to be there, and that's what the we all have to take away in a moment like this. Many times when we hear the stories of police officers and how they join the force, so many of them always step up to the challenge because they just want to help. I've never really encountered anybody who said that they did it for any other reason, quite honestly. Maybe you've heard stories, but for me, I've always spoken to people who maybe it was in their families. It was something they felt was a calling. It was always something that they dreamed of doing. And it's not an easy job. We all know that. Maybe we take it for granted. Maybe we just think, oh, you know, They're just writing out their pensions and things like that. But deep down, you know that every time they put on their uniform, they're taking a chance for us. And so we are heartbroken this evening. Again, at WGN Radio. I know we have in the newsroom, the story continues to develop. We're getting more information, and if anything else develops, we will certainly keep you informed. Do we have a break coming up? We're going to take a quick break here. It is Monday evening, and I hope that everyone is happy, healthy, and safe wherever you are. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Don Kleppen in the newsroom. We have Sammy. Sammy is our producer this evening. Sammy, I have a question for you. I was uncomfortable calling you Sammy, but you signed off on all of your emails as Sammy. So I have to assume that you prefer to be called Sammy. Is that accurate?
That is very accurate. I prefer Sammy because there was a past Sam here, which is one of my past mentors, and he made a big legacy here, and I honor that legacy. I'm going to make my own.
You mean so.
Sam Pianovich.
Sam Pianovich. Oh, wow, Dan. He went with Sam Pianovich. I didn't realize that you were, you felt it. Well, I love Sam Pianovich, and we miss him. Of course, he has moved on to Las Vegas, making a big splash there. So we miss him, and happy to have you here now.
I appreciate it. Pleasure to be here.
Don, do you prefer, does anyone ever call you Donald?
Oh, yeah. My mom calls me Donald occasionally.
Does that make you stand up straight?
Sort of. Yeah, definitely the full name, even though it's not lengthy, it does still have that power.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
The only one I disliked ever was Donnie. That's one that just still, it never really sits right.
Do you have any relatives that call you Donnie?
Yeah, and this old neighbor that used to do it, I was okay with too. But other than that, like, I got yelled at one time, I remember in high school, by a girlfriend because I guess I got drunk enough one night that I went on a tirade when someone else in the group called me Donnie, and I didn't know him very well.
Oh.
And it turned into like a half an hour
argument about it.
Thing, apparently, yeah. Yeah, more of like a one-sided bashing.
Well, sometimes you just feel very passionate about your name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you throw some alcohol in there. And
you're young. Your brain's still developing. You latch onto something, and that's the bone you're gonna chew.
That's what it was. It was the still developing brain that I had.
That's the way I would put it. Mm-hmm. Certainly. I've gone through different incarnations of mine, you know, variations, I guess. Because my name is Patricia.
Mm.
So Patricia in English. And my dad called me Patsy because he loved Patsy Cline.
Oh,
and yeah, and then I started playing Little League Baseball, and Patsy just wasn't a good tomboy name for me. Patty just seemed a little bit, Pat would be almost too, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little too abrupt, I thought.
Yeah.
So Patty just, I liked it, and I picked Patty with an I. Sam, do you not like being called Sam?
I like being called Sam. I actually go by a lot of different names. I go like Sammy, Sam. The last name is Martino. A lot of people like to call me Martino. But most of my friends call me Samantha. I don't like that.
What?
But yeah, they give me a little Samantha treatment. I should give them a little, you know.
Yeah, that seems a little. Well, I mean, does anyone ever call you Donna, Don?
No, not that I can think of. I mean, maybe in like, you know, in elementary school, I'm sure it happened.
Okay, you got taunted with that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what people do. And that is a weird thing, right? Trying to diminish a man by calling him a woman. You're like, okay, really? Is that what's going to make you happy? Making that reference?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got called Fatty Patty. That wasn't fun.
No.
Oh, sure.
That's not cool.
Well, it rhymes. What else are you going to rhyme with Patty?
I guess. Yeah, that's true.
Right. It's a fatty. But I remember, and it was weird, too, because I didn't have body issues until I was in high school. I was super skinny in grade school. Like my son. My son Griffin is like just rail. Like, he's all limbs. And someone called me Fatty Patty 2x4, couldn't get through the bathroom door.
Oh, a whole little, like, two verses? What the heck?
I know, right? Usually, like, a taunt should just be, like, just the one thing.
Yeah, you throw it out there and just, that's it.
No, you put a whole rhyme around it.
I know.
I'm fine. Do I have a life in comedy?
Absolutely.
You know?
You have to laugh at those things.
Well, I didn't do what you do. But see, it took me a while to learn how to laugh at it.
Mm-hmm.
I once got a phone call from a girl who used to bully me. Let's call her Gina, because that's her name. And she called me. My dad had seen her. He didn't know she was one of my bullies. And so he's like, hey, Pat, because he called me Pat when I was older. My dad was the only one who would call me Pat or Patsy.
Mm.
He said, hey, I saw your friend Gina. And he goes, I gave her your number. She wanted to give you a call. And she called me. And she said, I'm not surprised you became a comedian, because no matter how mean we were to you, you were always smiling.
Wow.
And I thought, what a weird way to say you think you are responsible for my career. Because you are not.
Right. Calling and taking credit for it in that subtle way.
I'm not surprised. Did you ever get picked on, Sammy?
Not so much.
Were you
good with
it?
I was more of the wrestler. I could take it. You know, I wrestled for 13 years. But it goes back to your point. Like, if you're going to take it, you could dish it. So.
See, but that's the thing is that I regret ever dishing it. Because you have to get yourself out of that cycle. Right? Like, if you feel pain, like, you have to learn a way to not make other people in pain. But that's a hard lesson to learn. You know, you've got to figure out a way to manage those. And I, when I was bullied as a kid, you know, I apparently smiled a lot. That's just the way I don't know.
It was your poker face.
It's my poker face. Yeah. Where did you grow up, Sammy?
Well, I've always been in West Chicago. My family's originally from Elmwood Park, Illinois.
Okay.
So
West Chicago's way out there. Good golf course out there.
Beautiful golf course out there. But yeah, it's a little distance. I commute here all the time. Mm-hmm. So I love the nice drive in though. City skyline.
You're driving in from Elmwood?
I drive in from West Chicago.
Now you're still driving in. That's about a 45-minute to an hour drive.
You're looking at about an hour 10 during traffic. So
the worst is when you get those. Now, do you come down 59? Do you come down North Avenue? What do you take?
I take 59 to 90 and take 90 straight shot.
Right? That's what I would always take to the Zanies in St. Charles.
I love Zanies Comedy Club.
That's a great
love
place.
Love it.
I've been working there for a long time. Yeah, I love that club. Where'd you grow up, Don?
North Chicago, Morton Grove.
Okay.
That's where I came from. My mom still lives there.
Do you remember that movie theater that used to be up on Dempster and Waukegan?
Absolutely.
Remember?
Morton Grove Theater.
Yeah. It's not like a big shoe store now, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
What's like Carnival or
yes!
something like that. Yeah.
My friend's family used to, they owned a business. They would clean big venues, and they used to, one of their contracts was with the Morton Grove Theater up there.
They used to have like dollar movie nights on Tuesdays.
Yes.
And lax security on rated R movies. So I definitely watched a few of those at that time.
Have there ever really been any movie theaters that had strict rules on kids getting in underage? Just out of curiosity.
Not that I've seen, no.
No. I mean, Sammy, you've gotten in, when you were younger, you got into movies you weren't supposed to see.
Of course, come on. You slide right by, and that was in.
Yeah, just saying. By the way, Don, I don't know if you saw this text. They're correcting or adding information, I think, from the 312. Patty, between news reports and CBS website reports, some say it was a South Shore train, and some say, even Super Johnson said, it was a Metra train. Do you happen to know which it was?
The Metra, it's a Metra Indiana South Shore Line train. So it is Metra, mm-hmm. but the line is referred to shorthanded as the South Shore Line.
Okay, so yeah, because Bobby D says they both share the same tracks but are different railroads. Thank you for that, Bobby. I hope we cleared that up a little bit for you. And thank you for asking. Again, we are talking about different topics. We're kind of going back and forth. And it is a tragic evening tonight as two police officers were struck and killed, as Don has been reporting, by a South Shore train. And we may check in with former U.S. Marshal John O'Malley in just a moment on 720 WGN. I'm going to do this live read here so we make sure we get to this right now. You've all had dreams growing up of seeing your names up in lights or on the marquee of the Chicago Theater, or even written out with the stars in the night sky. Even though the stars won't actually spell out your name, we have a product that can fulfill these dreams. The 2019 personalized calendars are back and available now at WGNradio.com. Made to order with any name you choose, artistically incorporated into Chicago's legendary scenes. As if it was part of an actual photograph. Produced by our friends at 2K's, these new calendars will help you stay organized as well as give you a sense of awe. Give this thoughtful gift that lasts year long, and best yet, remind someone how much they mean to you while they use it every day. To order yours, visit WGNradio.com and scroll to the feature section. Check out how you can become a part of Chicago. You're listening to WGN Radio, and we have been talking about the tragic evening in which two Chicago police officers, were struck and killed by a South Shore train. They were in pursuit of a suspect. Shots were fired, and they, of course, responded to the call. And on the line with us, we have former U.S. Marshal John O'Malley. And I know there's a longer title for you, but I didn't have a chance to pull it up. John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing okay, Patty. It's just sad, obviously, to hear the news. Got a couple of texts from some people earlier this evening. I thought I was, you know, couldn't believe it. It was for real. You know, it's the real tragedy.
That was how I felt when I got the alert on my phone. I thought, well, this can't be happening. And you know, and first you think, okay, was there a squad car trapped on the tracks? You know, you start trying to figure. But mostly, of course, the first thing you think is none of it matters except that we've lost. I mean, in the immediate moment, we've lost two police officers, two men who took the responsibility of protecting the city of Chicago. Tell us a little bit about what happened tonight, John.
So it sounds like there's some ShotSpotter technology in throughout the city. A lot of them on the south side. What happens is those ShotSpotters will pick up obviously loud sounds that sound like gunfire. That information then goes back to the ShotSpotter command center in California, where they have trained analysts who buy the information they're actually getting from those actual pieces of equipment that are on the street, and make a pretty quick determination that actually is gunfire, not a car backfiring, not fireworks. And they will then, once they determine that, they believe a high probability is actual gunfire, they will then contact the OEMC, the 911 center here in Chicago, who then puts out those calls, and they know exactly where it's coming from.
Okay.
So they try to get that done within 30 to 45 seconds at the longest. And then that call will go out from the OEMC, the dispatcher in that zone, where the 5th District is in this case, and put that call out. So those officers were responding to a bona fide call of shots fired in a near 101st and Dauphine, which is like two blocks from where they ended up in foot pursuit of this offender. And that foot pursuit then led them out of their vehicle and up onto the railroad tracks. You know, we'll never know, I guess, how it is they didn't see or hear the train or what the situation there was. But, you know, when you're in a foot pursuit, your focus and your adrenaline is so high that sometimes that your body just you lose sense of some of your other senses. You get tunnel vision, and if they saw the offender, they were probably so focused on his travel of flight that they just pursued him up there, and unfortunately, we had the tragedy that we have tonight.
And this is reminded me, and I'm sure a lot of people remember in 2002 when Officer Perez was struck and killed by a train in pursuit of a suspect as well. He was up; he was in an embankment on the side of the tracks.
Right.
And it's just, I mean, again, as you mentioned, the adrenaline is flowing. They're in pursuit, and you may not, you know, just even you're not. That's not what you're focused on, right? You have again tunnel vision. Just focus on pursuing the suspect. This is. I'm so sad tonight. I'm so sorry for you and fellow law enforcement.
Yeah, and you know, there'll be the investigation will show that, you know, there. I'm making an assumption, but that there was probably some radio traffic of the officer or one of them at least. They both wouldn't be, on the radio giving their direction of travel, giving the direction of travel and the description of the offender that they were pursuing. And it sounds like there is a person who is in custody. You know, the detectives will do what they're brought in to do and investigate and try to put some evidence on this person who's in custody. If, in fact, that was the person they were chasing. I also understand what the media reported, that a weapon was recovered.
Right.
I don't know, on this offender's person or in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, that individual could be facing murder charges because those officers were killed in the commission of this person's crime,
right,
fleeing from the police. So that's on the table. That'll all come out, as they do the investigation.
We are talking to former Chief Deputy United States Marshal of the Northern District, John O'Malley. And we got a text from George Bliss, who was at the press conference. He says the exact location was 103rd and Dauphine. I'm not familiar with the area, but you know,
east of Cottage Grove. So about Cottage Grove is, from my memory serves, about 800 east. So Martin Luther King is about 400. So as you're going east on 103rd, Dauphine is, I think, just east of Cottage Grove.
Okay. And is there ever, I mean, do officers train? I mean, how do you train for an oncoming train or being in a situation where, you know, your senses may be focused on what you're, you know, the person that you're pursuing or the situation that you're in, rather than perhaps, you know, I just, that's got to be so hard. Is there ever any training?
No, I mean, the training is, there's really not. It's, but once, you know, foot pursuits are extremely dangerous because, as a matter of fact, I was hit by a car at a foot pursuit back in the day and never saw the vehicle coming.
Right.
So it just happened because of that, your focus is such. But and it's a very dangerous position to be in because you're away from the safety of any concealment or cover. You know, you left your vehicle,
right?
Which is the officer's office, right? That's your safety of that vehicle is gone. There's a possibility of being separated not only from your partner but from the other officers are also responding to that call, and this is a hot call. Once it's bona fide that there is an actual offender who they know just fired a weapon, so that this person is armed, and
right.
You know, it's like the firefighters running into a burning building. It's the same thing. Police officers are trained to go towards that danger. They know they're chasing a person who most likely just fired a weapon, so that they know how dangerous it is. But you know, these were young officers. Not only young in age, but young on the job, and
right.
They want to be aggressive. They're out there. They're the ones out there that you want out there to respond to that call, not only for help, but when there's people, you know, firing weapons on the street. These are the guys that are rushing to get there. Just like you saw Officer Jimenez, he was on a job to deliver mail to the district, and yet he, you know, hightailed it to Mercy Hospital and to get into a shooting situation. So these guys are out there, you know, Patty, why I no longer am in the game and we go about our business, our daily lives. And these guys are out there really hustling and going after it. And these are, you know, we don't even hear about all the arrests that they make on a daily and hourly basis, especially in this city.
We were talking about the two officers who were tragically struck and killed by a South Shore train this evening, Conrad Gary and Eduardo Marmalejo. They were 31. Conrad Gary was 31 years old, and Officer Eduardo Marmalejo was 37. Officer Gary and Officer Marmalejo. And I know that we'll get more information in the next few hours. And I know, again, as you mentioned, Officer Jimenez, who was laid to rest just a few weeks ago, and we spoke to you on that evening as well. I am getting a couple of texts. Someone texted, below 100 training is the closest we get. What's below 100? Is that something you're familiar with?
No, I don't. That doesn't ring a bell to me. Below 100?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I'm not sure.
Another text says, "Hey, Patty, those are electric trains, and you can't hear them coming. You can only see the headlamps at night." Oh.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was not the Metro train. It was the South Shore train. It sounds like, which, you know, it could have been quiet. And again, you know. Were there sirens from other responding cars, you know, in the area that interrupted their hearing or impaired their hearing? You know, we'll never know. But I wouldn't doubt if the NTSB came in as well to investigate because, you know, it was a transportation involved in the accident. So
here's another text from the 773. Because it's a narrow overpass, the trains don't use their bright lights in that area as they approach each other. They don't want to blind each other. The train light is dim. It's hard to see from a distance and doesn't illuminate the tracks very much.
Oh. Right. And you know, at 6, about 6:20, 6:30 at night is, you know, fairly dark.
Right.
So you had a couple of things going, you know. I don't know how loud or not loud electric trains are. The lighting was bad. And yeah, I guess that makes sense. If there was another train approaching, their lights are not bright. And, you know, there's nothing that a train conductor can do at that rate of speed. If he even saw them entering the tracks. And I feel for that conductor, too, and everyone on that train that was involved in that, that situation. So that's a big crime scene, as you can imagine. Someone, you know, being hit by a train at that rate of speed, it's a pretty large crime scene, and I imagine they'll be out there for quite a while. I was hoping they got some bright lights in there so they could illuminate what's going on up there, because it is a crime scene, and they're going to want to, you know, gather as much evidence as possible.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely,
again.
Patty.
Thank you. We were talking to former Chief Deputy of the United States Marshal, Northern District, John O'Malley. He's our law enforcement expert, and we'll look forward to seeing you before Christmas, I hope. Come on in. Stop by if you get a chance. Give you a hug.
All right, Patty. Take care.
Even if it's just for the hug, sir.
All right, I will. I'll take you up on that.
All right, thank you. Be well, and again, my condolences to you and your brothers and sisters.
You too, Patty, and good luck with your new show.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Again, one more text from the 301. I just woke up to the sad news. These things hit so hard. So my grandpa was an NYC policeman, and we have two friends who are on the force in our area. My prayers are with the families of those officers who were lost. So thank you so much for all the heartfelt texts, and we will continue the conversation throughout the evening. If we have developing news, of course, we will let you know. Right now, it is time for our news, and if you know you want to be listening to the Steve Cochran Show as he celebrates the most valuable person on the planet, weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and on the line with us is Tommy Davidson, who's performing at the Improv in Schaumburg this weekend, Friday through Sunday. And Tommy, I have to be honest with you, I'm not letting these guys talk until later, but Tommy, I've got two other comics in studio, James Vickery and Paul Farvar. I surround myself with comics. You are one of the most versatile.
I feel sorry for you. I'm very sorry about that.
No, I chose this life, you know. It didn't choose me, I chose it. Actually, that's a good way to start. Did you choose comedy, or did it kind of find you? Did you just realize it was something that had to be done?
Yeah, it found me.
Yeah.
I actually, you know, my first show was in a strip club in Washington, D.C., the worst strip club ever, and my friend wanted me to do comedy, and he worked there, and he just said, man, please, just let these guys let you go on stage. And I did it one time, and I never stopped.
What? He just said, go on up there and do stuff. I love that.
Yeah, he tried to get me down there for the longest time, and then finally I decided to go down there, and the guy said, you got 5 minutes. And I looked at my friend. I said, well, what am I supposed to do? He said, I don't care what you do. Just get up there and open your mouth.
Wow. Do you remember what you said? Because I remember my first set. I mean, I'm not proud of it, but I remember it.
Yeah, I actually just told a real story. I just told them, yeah, my mom, you know, we had a lot of roaches, and my mom said if you cleaned up the kitchen, we wouldn't. So she made us clean up the kitchen Saturday and Sunday, and that's big if you're a kid.
Yeah.
We stayed in all day.
Your whole weekend.
Saturday and Sunday, and yeah, the whole weekend to clean up the kitchen. And she was right. We did not have any roaches in the kitchen anymore. But when we came home from school, we were watching Speed Racer, we found out that the roaches were eating our couch.
Oh, no. And that's your first set? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh,
and they had moved. They had moved from the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the joke. But, I mean, they got it. Like, I didn't even have to explain it. I mean, they were just rolling, you know?
That's wonderful. And it's funny because I don't think people realize that how much comedy was done in strip clubs.
Right.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So from there, you ended up touring with musicians. You're a musician yourself, and I everything you do, whether it's comedy or performing as an actor or as a musician, you're just, honestly, just one of the most captivating people I've ever seen.
Thank you. Thank you. I always need to hear that.
I saw you on the campus of the University of Illinois when I was in college. You played Fullinger.
I remember that.
Yeah, you were one of the, I mean, just, you're just wonderful and delightful and adorable and funny and all of those things.
I'll tell you something funny about that. Something really cool. I had met a girl named Pookie there.
What?
One of the students who had brought me to that school, right?
Okay.
Her name was Pookie. I think her real name was Karen or something. But she's from East St. Louis, and she, you know, got a scholarship to that school. And so she said, I'm going to be a doctor, you know? And I said, okay, cool. You know, East St. Louis is the worst city, you know?
Sure.
And so I'm talking years later. I'm talking about maybe 15 years later.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a show in Dallas. And I'm backstage, and everybody was, like, kind of taking pictures. And she said, Tommy, it's Pookie. I was like, Pookie from Illinois? She said, yeah, but it's Dr. Clark now.
What? Wow. That's outstanding.
Yep.
Oh, and what? And you? I love that you remember that. I mean, not only that,
yeah.
But all of that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, man, what a career.
That's cool.
Well, that's the thing.
It's been a ride.
What's the thing is that, I mean, there are people who have a career, and there are people who have incredible lives, and it sounds like you've done that. You've embraced all of it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I'm doing the what do they call it? The water ski. I got both feet on the daggone thing.
That's right.
Without falling.
You know, not the one, not the onesie. What's the onesie that you do behind the boat?
Oh, what's that called? Yeah, that, what is that board? I don't know what that's called. I've never.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just the
whatever that is. Not that's. I'll call it a onesie.
The onesie.
But, yeah. Balance. But to have the two, that's a whole another complicated deal.
Yep.
You know, just one leg go out a little bit and it's coming off. You know.
Yep. Now, when you're performing at the Improv and you've got your skis beneath you, what are you talking about these days? Because I avoid anything that's political. I stick with the autobiographical or observational. What do you enjoy talking about?
I am like the freaking internet. You know, I am like, you know, did you see Minority Report?
I did. Yes.
Remember when he's bringing the, you know, when they're going to find out a crime and he brings this screen in and that screen in and...
Just flipping through everything?
Doing this and that.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I go from Obama to I'm talking about Meads, you know, the Mead commercial, and I'm going, you should have picked me, man. You know, I'm just everywhere now.
Right.
I'm a little piece of everything. I'm a little piece of other countries. I'm a little piece of cities here. I'm a little piece of people. I'm an East Indian cashier dealing with a rude ass white woman. I'm a white guy walking through the Home Depot hearing a gunshot. I'm the Spanish TV.
Right.
You know, I'm the drunk cousin.
You're
at the holidays.
House. Yeah, you're a kaleidoscope of life.
Yeah, I'm the mask.
You're the mask. In which you were, by
that's
the way.
I feel like that. I feel like that when I'm on stage now. Like, I just morph.
Yeah.
And this. And then that'll come to me. And, you know, I have a set and stuff that I do.
Right.
You know? But it's starting to change again.
Right. You got to keep...
Starting to change again. It's starting to, like, expand, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. You have to keep evolving as a comedian and,
yes.
and to have the career that you've had. You know, you also have to keep it fun for you as much as it is for the audience.
Oh, I keep it too fun. I am the audience.
Yep. Well,
I am the audience. I do my comedy at the speed of the audience.
That's,
you know?
Well, and you have to, because you got that kind of energy, man. You're just exploding when you're on stage.
It feels good.
I love that. I love that you still enjoy doing it. And I hope when you're in town, I know that you're busy and we're downtown and you're in the Schaumburg. But if not this time, I hope sometime you'll come in studio and hang out with us, because it'd be great
too.
To meet you. Yeah. We'd love to meet you.
You know what's so exciting about it, though, you know, is that it's like the only thing, you know, it's like one of the only things I could do right.
I
you know what I mean? It's like okay, I'm into this. I'm into this. Nobody can tell me what to do.
Right.
You know, it feels good. You know, I don't have to try to make anybody happy. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to feel uncomfortable about what you're thinking. It's
right.
Just like, you know what I mean? It's like the free zone.
It is.
You know, it's like the little jumpers that the kids get in at the parties.
Yep. The bouncy houses.
Yeah, it seems like a bouncy house. I just go in, wham, wham, wham. They go, thank you, man. Good night, guys. And then I hop off, and I'm back in the damn world. You know what I mean?
So true.
I do. I love that. Well, if you promise me someday you'll come in studio, I just want to meet you because, like I said, I was in that audience. I was in the balcony. You helped me fall in love with comedy, and I'm sure you've inspired all kinds of people to really crush their parents' dreams. And
thank you.
I'm sure that Pookie became a doctor, but I did not. My mom forgives you.
Let me tell you something. If you can survive Chicago at this time of year through May, through March, you can do anything.
There's no doubt about that. Well, I hope it's not too cold while you're here. And I want to invite everyone to go to the Chicago Improv. Go to chicago.improv.com. You'll see a link for Tommy Davidson right there. And the shows are Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and you can get tickets right there and more information and watch some video of him, and I'm sure people are going to be downloading now because you are the internet. You are the bouncy house, and it's Tommy Davidson.
Hey. And most importantly, it's a great club. I've been going there for years, and you just have a great time, and I'm talking about that just as a showgoer.
Yeah.
You have a good time.
You will have a great time with Tommy. Have a great week. And,
and the Bears won last night.
They did. They won the NFC
North Central.
Now, how about this?
Yes.
You want to hear something? I'm not trying to kiss nobody's butt or nothing. I predicted that.
I believe you. I have no reason to doubt you.
I predicted that from the first game I saw them, and I saw that quarterback,
yep.
And I saw that linebacker, and I saw it's kind of where they are right now.
Right.
It was just like it's. I was like, watch them. And nobody even remembers me telling them that now.
I'm going to remember it.
Somebody's like, no, I don't remember you telling me that. I don't remember you telling me that. I'm like, all right, whatever.
Well, I'm going to count it as you gave them good luck, Tommy. So we appreciate that.
They look good. I did. Thank you very much. I'll take credit for that.
As you should. Thank you so much, Tommy. You have a great weekend, and we'll see you soon, okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much. Tommy Davidson at the Zany at the Improv in Schaumburg. You can go to chicago.improv.com for ticket information. That's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and he's one of the best. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. And last week, I had the distinct honor of being the moderator for the Northwest Side Chicago Mayoral Candidates Forum, and it was incredible. There were 10 candidates, but in the field right now, there are 21, and not long after we had that forum, news broke that there was going to be a docuseries a 6 1-hour episode series that will have everyone watching what is going on during this campaign. And joining us on the line right now is a producer, one of the producers, because this is a whole team doing this. Rebecca Halpern joins us from California right now, originally from Chicago. Hey, Rebecca, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, Patty, how are you?
I'm very well. Sorry we're running a little bit behind. We had some breaking news earlier, and I'm so grateful for your time. And I know that you've got a lot of work to do. Where are we on Chicago 2019?
Well, first, I just want to say I'm so sorry to the families of those two officers who were killed in the line of duty tonight. That was a very unfortunate situation. They put so much on the line, everything on the line, really, to keep us all safe. So, thank you to them and their families for making the ultimate sacrifice for everybody in Chicago.
And you're right.
But
it's such a big part of our story. I mean, so much of our identity is wrapped up in our law enforcement, our first responders. And I know that's something that as you move forward with this docuseries, I'm sure will be an element that you'll also cover. Where are we with the docuseries?
So we are right now actively talking to networks to get the show set up. We have partnered with Common, who most people in Chicago know as a Academy Award-winning musician, actor, activist. He's very active in Chicago with his Common Ground Foundation. And I couldn't be more grateful to have him as a partner. And then I'm also partnered with Ample Entertainment, which is the production company behind Cooper's Treasure on Discovery with Amblin, which is a Steven Spielberg's company. They're also doing a new Facebook series with Courtney Cox right now. And then there's a few other people behind the scenes. Michael Masters, who is the former chief of staff for the Chicago Police and chief of Homeland Security for Cook County. And Susan Cronin, who is a very, very well-connected businesswoman in Chicago and in Los Angeles, whose work in social entrepreneurship really is helping to make a difference. So we think with our team, which is, you know, like you said, it takes a village, we're really uniquely positioned to deliver a series the likes of which no one has ever seen before. And Chicago, you know, Chicago's been the star of a few docuseries, Chicagoland on CNN to name one. And then, of course, you've got Dick Wolf and all of his scripted series on NBC. So that's where we are. But, you know, it's funny to your point about the first responders, the EMTs, police officers. You know, Chicago has suffered from a tale of two cities narrative. You know, when you look at the map, whether it's the gun violence map, tax inequity, pollution, you name it, it seems like we just keep seeing the same map over and over and over again. And while it may be true, that narrative has disincentivized people from taking action and feeling empowered to do something to change their circumstances for the better. And what we're hoping to do with this series is to give people a better understanding of what the choices that are made at City Hall mean to them and how it could impact their everyday lives. and that their voice is their vote. And so, you know, that's the ultimate goal, is to unify rather than to continue with this sort of fractured narrative that we've been hearing over and over and over again.
You're absolutely right. There is this idea on a national level of what Chicago is, and that really isn't the whole story. And I'm excited to see what you bring to the screen, because with 21 candidates with such a wide variety of backgrounds, whether it's law enforcement like Gary McCarthy or Lori Lightfoot, who has worked in the civilian aspect of police and law enforcement, and she's a lawyer herself, you know, Tony Preckwinkle, the Cook County Board President. It is interesting to think of what their backgrounds might mean for the future of Chicago. What has been your sense as far as the candidates go? Have you spoken to any of them about the possibility of this docuseries?
Yes, we've gotten access to many of the candidates. We're very excited about that. We think that, you know, each of them brings such a unique storyline to the series that we feel confident that every aspect of Chicago, every walk of life will be addressed through the series. I think that these candidates, you know, forgetting about the fact that there's 21 of them, I mean, that 21 people think that they can run this city is incredible, considering, you know, the challenges ahead. And it's going to take someone who can inspire hope, who can inspire people to take action in their own communities. It's going to take someone who can convince people that sometimes tough choices are the important right choices in the long run. There's no easy solutions to any of the problems that Chicago faces. And what makes Chicago so unique right now is that it is truly a microcosm of the issues that are plaguing the country. And to see it all play out on this stage, which has been notoriously the most epic arena in local politics, is going to be, I think, an interesting, eye-opening, and enlightening experience for audiences. Plus, you know, because of what we've been through in the last few years with our current administration, I think people are more aware and more savvy about politics and how the machine is run than ever before. And so having an enlightened viewership will, I think, make it even more rich for them to watch as the election plays out. But this series is not really about, I mean, it is about the election, but it's also, and even more so, about the city's future.
We are talking to television producer Rebecca Halpern, who's developing the docuseries Chicago 2019. It'll be 6 one-hour episodes, and we'll talk a little bit more about how this will work, too, because the election is on February 26th. Chances are a single candidate will not get 50% of the vote. So let's talk a little bit about what happens in that instance. More in a moment. We're going to do the news and rejoin our conversation with Rebecca Halpern. 312-981-7200. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to join us. More when we come back on 720 WGN. Ever since Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced that he would not be seeking re-election, the field of candidates has grown exponentially. And there was actually a tweet by Paul Vallis. He's like, hey, if he didn't have the guts to do it while he was still in the race, what are you doing here now? And maybe we'll learn more about that from the docuseries Chicago 2019. Joining us on the line is Rebecca Halpern. She's a television producer who is working on this project. These are 6 one-hour episodes. Is that right, Rebecca?
Yes, that is the intention, yes.
Yeah, I don't even know if that's going to... I don't know if 6 hours is going to be enough to tell this saga. Really?
I feel like we could probably go on and on and on, even after the mayor is elected, whoever that's going to be.
No doubt about it. Well, and that's the thing, is that... So we actually had one of our first... I think it might have been the first runoff election when Rahm Emanuel ran against Chuy Garcia.
Chuy.
Yeah, there's no way there's going to be a candidate that gets more than 50% of the vote, in which case there does have to be a runoff election in April. So are your plans to continue to follow that story?
Yeah, I think we definitely want to start wide and then narrow down as the race narrows down. We want to focus down on the issues that the candidates are really going head to head on. And I think a lot of that's going to be driven by what we're seeing on the streets in the day-to-day. For example, you know, these two officers who were killed in the line of duty tonight responding to a shots fired call, or the Thanksgiving blizzard, you know, and people trying to salvage whatever they can of their parking spaces. I mean, it can be a range of things, but that's life in a city, right? So I think to capture what's happening in the election wouldn't be well served without capturing what's happening on the streets at the same time. And so those two narratives almost need to go hand in hand.
You're absolutely right about that. And you know, there's been so much development in the downtown area in the Loop along the river under the administration of Mayor Rahm Emanuel. And a lot of people talk about how, and you mentioned this, is how do you invest in the neighborhoods? How do you unify the city? And at the forum last week, the issues that came up, as you mentioned, were obviously law enforcement, also criminal justice reform, education. But you mentioned saving their parking spots. There was only one out of the 10 candidates who was against Dibs. And of course, it was a former superintendent of the police department, Gary McCarthy. And I mean, he's got a point. But that's the thing, is that there's such a wide of a variety of opinions when it comes to all these issues. I'm fascinated and excited that you're going to be doing this.
Well, and something like Dibs sounds like a joke to people on the outside, but I defy anyone to, like, shovel their car out of 18 inches of snow and not want to keep that parking space, you know? Right. So that's a purely uniquely Chicago phenomenon, and that's something that I think any docuseries about Chicago needs to capture, is what's happening in the day-to-day in the neighborhoods. You know, this series it's very personal to me. I grew up in Chicago. My father was involved in construction in Chicago for many years. And in fact, when he moved to the city in the mid-60s, one of the first projects that he won was the Sears Tower. And he was the executive in charge of construction for that project. And what's striking to me about the Sears construction was that in 1968 and 69 is when the heavy-duty planning was happening for the tower. And it was at a time that was very tumultuous for the city, between the race riots, the Democratic National Convention, the police tensions, all of that. Chicago really needed a beacon or a landmark that all of its residents could get behind and believe in, and that could inspire hope in everyone. And when the Sears Tower came along, you know, the steel workers were so proud to work on the building that they wore their hard hats to the office, on the trains, on the buses. People would cheer them on as they would get off to go to work. And originally, the tower was not meant to be the world's tallest building. It was supposed to be this short, fat, squat building. They called it the pig. But these visionaries got together and they recognized, you know, architect Bruce Graham, engineer Foz Khan, my dad, and Sears chairman Gordon Metcalf. They realized that they had an opportunity here to build something that was bigger than themselves, that was bigger than Sears, that would be the biggest in the world. And they built the Sears Tower, which frankly, it will always be the Sears Tower to me.
Oh,
sorry, Willis, or whomever it's going to be now, but
Willis is a sponsor, you know, of WGN, by the way.
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm kidding.
Love Willis. But anyway, no, my point is that when you look at what Chicago is enduring today, there's so many similarities and parallels. And this election, in many respects, serves as sort of that next turning point for the city. And whoever the next mayor is could potentially be that beacon of hope for people to get behind and really have a renewed faith and a renewed sense of empowerment that they too can make a difference in their own communities and bring the city together.
I love how much passion you have, not just obviously for this project, but for the city of Chicago. And it must be so incredible to come into Chicago and see, you know, the Sears Tower piercing the sky and knowing how much your father was involved in that. And as well as other landmarks like the McCormick Place and Navy Pier and
the Harold
Washington, you know, Library. I mean, what a legacy your father has left.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny. It's like I drive down the street and I look up and I see him almost everywhere in the city. And that's something that I don't take lightly, is his contribution. And I want to find a way to give back as well. It was a very difficult decision for me to move to Los Angeles, but one I needed to make. I got my break in documentary television in Chicago. A man by the name of Jonathan Towers at Towers Productions gave me my first project. It was about a cockatoo that witnessed its owner's murder and helped police solve the crime.
I've heard of this story.
And from there, it just took off. I got involved in gangland, and they hired me back to do a bunch of other projects. And I'm so grateful for that opportunity because I really learned the right way to tell impactful, meaningful stories that, you know, that people care about. You know, gangland was incredible. I got to embed with people from all walks of life, much different than my own. A gang of contract killers in Detroit in the 80s, the Asian boys in Long Beach, California, several others. And then I went on to Bill Curtis, and I worked for Bill on American Greed for CNBC. And there I got to experience what it was like for these white-collar criminals to pull off their crimes. And, you know, I really cut my teeth in Chicago. And I'm so grateful for that. And to be able to come home now and employ Chicago talent to make this show would really be just a full circle moment for me that would be so important and meaningful. The talent that's in Chicago right now, and I could start naming names and not stop till the end of your broadcast, but they have substance, they have taste, they're sophisticated, they're smart, they're savvy, they're sharp, they're streetwise. I could go on and on. I can't wait for them to have an opportunity to tell this story about the city that they care so much about as well. And for us to have a team together that can do that will make for a truly authentic, original project. So I'm very excited.
I love how passionate you are. We were talking to television producer Rebecca Halpern. She's working on the Project Chicago 2019, taking an unflinching look at a city desperate for direction as we head into the thick of the mayoral election. And let's talk to her a little bit more about this docuseries as well as her career. And I want to talk a little bit about Northwestern and how you got started telling stories. And I really love what you've been doing, Rebecca.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Go Wildcats. More in a moment on 720 yeah. WGN. Listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me in studio are comedians Paul Farvar and James Vickery. And on the line with us is television producer Rebecca Halpern, who is developing a docuseries following the mayoral campaign, as we have 21 candidates. Okay. Wow. So the docuseries at Chicago 2019, Rebecca, this is something that I am so thrilled that you're going to be sharing with the country, with the world. And how did this fall into place? What was the sort of genesis of this?
So the genesis was my friend and partner, Michael Masters, and I have long wanted to come up with a TV show that's set in Chicago. About 10 years ago, we came up with an idea for the Chicago police, and that fell through. And then we came up with several others throughout the years. And then this year he called me up one morning and he said, you know what would be an incredible series? And I said, what's that? And he said, a show about the mayoral race. And at the time it was really mostly just Gary McCarthy running against Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah.
And that storyline, these two gladiators going up against each other in the biggest arena in local politics, felt very, for lack of a better term, intense. especially when you look at the backstory of what had happened to Gary, right, and what had happened with Rahm. And then over the summer, more candidates started to come in, and we started to think, well, maybe we should broaden this out beyond just Gary. And so we started to reach out to other candidates who all were eager to participate. And then when Rahm dropped out, I think it was the Sun-Times that had a headline that said Rahm Shell. He literally did drop a Rahm Shell. And he dropped one for us because all of a sudden we were like, oh no, now we've got to get 21 candidates to sign up for our show. But, you know, I think one of the things, Go ahead, Patty.
No, but this story is incredible, though. I mean, like, it, as much as it would have been one thing, yeah. I think that with Rom running, the chances were that you would have, you know, this sort of, I don't know, bulldozer coming through. And with this, like, you know, the way you even frame it as, you know, who's going to lead the city and unite us is incredible.
Yeah, well, you know, and the interesting part is I think the future happens in the rearview mirror. And you have to look backwards to know where you're going. And so for so many in Chicago, the context historically of why we are where we are today has been lost in the narrative. This is, and I think Lori Lightfoot might have said it in your panel that you moderated last week, Patty, you know, this is the result of decades-old policies and patronage that have been good for some, have hurt many, and has not helped most at the end of the day. Right. These are, you know, policies that have created systemic racism insofar as how the neighborhoods and the wards are drawn and where they are. And for so many, it's kept them in their own little boxes, or I should say the bubble for that matter. You know, has really done a disservice. And because it's been so long that these policies have been in place, you know, these solutions seem so far out of reach. And that's what, to me, is most interesting about these candidates, is that they are visionaries. You know, for them to even contemplate a solution to a problem like gun violence, like the pension crisis, like education in our under-resourced schools. I mean, to me, the thought processes that go into that, and also on some level, on the flip side, the hubris of these candidates is really interesting from a human perspective, from a psychological perspective. What drives people to lead others out of difficult times into a brighter future?
And I would thank the candidates when they were on the stage for saying, I can do the job. Because, I mean, as much as it's going to be unwieldy for you to have 21 candidates, I think it ups the game in many ways, don't you, to have these conversations, to sort of push each other into conversations that may not be comfortable, or what they're even as familiar as they may have been yesterday or last week. I don't know if
I mean, you're so spot on, Patty. I feel like if there ever was a time when you could have a frank, open, honest conversation about so many issues that people have been too nervous or touchy or afraid to get too close to, I think it's right now. I mean, if Trump has done anything for us, and everyone's politics aside, if he's done anything, it's enabled all of us to say what we're thinking.
No doubt.
Right?
That's so true.
Yep.
And so now is the time for a show like this, when we can maybe open up the dialogue and start getting real with each other about why we are where we are and how do we get to a better place.
Such a great idea, and I'm grateful that you're doing this. You are, as I mentioned before the break, a wildcat, both undergrad and graduate school. Is that right?
Yep, I was a theater major as an undergraduate, and then I went back for my master's degree in broadcast journalism and magazine publishing at Medill.
What a great start. I mean, it's a wonderful university, one that I didn't quite complete. My mom is okay. She's okay. She actually said if you don't like it, get out. So it just wasn't for me, academics, but Northwestern is such a great place for, and Medill for journalism, the theater program. What a great worldview for you, too. I mean, I know that you're from here, but people come from all over the world to attend that university, and obviously top-notch academics.
Well, I think Chicago is such an interesting city because we do have access to such incredible higher education facilities like Northwestern, University of Chicago, UIC. And then you take that and you think about how few opportunities the kids who grow up in certain neighborhoods actually have to achieve those dreams of attending those universities, much less knowing what those universities are or that they even exist. That's a real problem. You know, I grew up on the North Shore. I was very lucky to grow up in a family where college was never in doubt for me. It was never a question. That's just the way it was going to be. But for so many, kids all across the city, you know, that is a pipe dream. It just, that just, and that just doesn't compute to me, and it shouldn't be like that. And so, yeah, for me to be able to help people, you know, even just open their eyes a little bit to what the reality is for people on the other side, would be huge for me. So that's super important. And, you know, Northwestern, I've been very lucky. I know how to tell a good story because of Northwestern, because of my experience in Chicago. And then moving out here and working with some incredible professionals and creative visionaries out here, you know, it's so funny. There's a lot about being a builder, like my dad, or a storyteller or a producer like me, or a mayoral candidate like the 21 people who are running right now, that's not very different. You know, these, we're all visionaries, and our job is all about communicating a vision to people to get them to buy in and believe in what we are proposing. And so for that reason alone, I feel like the story of the mayoral race is one that needs to be told. It's important, but it's more important for the city.
Yeah,
to know what's going on.
Exactly. And again, we will, as soon as we find out more, as soon as you have it ready to go, we're going to check in with Rebecca Halpern again, the television producer, Rebecca Halpern, who's bringing Chicago 2019 to your screens very soon. We've got to run, Rebecca. Have a great night. And is there a website?
Thanks, Patty.
Is there a website people can find out more?
Not yet. We will let you know when there is.
All right. We'll have her back. Have a great night, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. I am typically mocked for my lack of musical knowledge, and I'm going to go ahead and ask if Paul Farvar is familiar with what music is playing right now as you listen to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. Paul, what music is this?
Oh, man, I don't know. I don't even know who this is.
Okay, I feel better
now. I thought
it
was Nine Inch Nails, but I was wrong.
I don't know either.
Sammy, since you pushed the button for the music, do you happen to know what you're playing?
Boys in the Hood.
Oh, it is Easy Boys in the Hood.
Really?
Wow. All right. Post NWA version, right?
Mm-hmm.
No promises.
We recently launched a segment on this show called Patty's Appalling Lack of Musical Knowledge to the delight of Paul and many others, including Andrea. And it's okay. And Annie Mazur, who couldn't believe it was happening. It's okay.
It was a shock to see it happen in real life, and I thought that it's something that people should be a part of and to know that was happening.
James. I will say that was one of the first, it was maybe the first musical item ever bought. It was a CD.
What?
NWA.
Oh, okay.
No, Straight yeah. Outta Compton.
Oh, and there was it really?
It really was. Like,
I believe you if you say so, James.
I was big fans of rap later in life.
Tape.
Yeah.
Was it?
It really was. And I listened to it, like, I felt like I was so getting away with something. Like,
you were in trouble.
Oh, they're saying words.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The worst thing about cassette tapes is when it would, like, unspool and you'd have to get a pencil and stick it in there and try to, set it.
So my neighbor in my building is an elderly woman, and she listens to cassette tapes because her car is right next to mine. And I just always like to go see what's on the list today. And I put on my Instagram. But her favorite, which was one of her favorites, was Unspooled, like you said.
Yeah.
It was the Footloose soundtrack.
Oh, man.
And every day
I
just keep checking in on it, like, every day. You're like, maybe, did she unspool it yet? It's still right there on the...
She can't fix it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. For Christmas, I'll just buy her one. Or I have a spool thing, fixer.
Oh, there's a fixer?
Yeah, like, there
it's
was
not,
like
not a pencil?
That'd
she's
be amazing.
A pencil.
I know, but I think they're... Yeah,
it's more severe than that.
It looked like it was pretty bad.
A little more advanced.
But I think it's more the problem with the player.
Come with
so
your
we
spool
could clean.
Fixer.
Yeah.
We need to... I have the cleaner audio cleaner for the cassette deck in the car.
Okay, that could be helpful, too. We were all at Zany's tonight as they had their very first, at least as far as I know, the first time in my career, a holiday party for all comics, throughout the decade.
Staff,
Zany's.
Comics. It was amazing.
It was wonderful. People flew in for this party. We saw guys like Steve Mandel and Steve Segrin was there, Larry Reed, Bill Gorgo, John DeCause was there, obviously from the Steve Cochran show. There were so many comics.
And some people from right down the street who went over two blocks to come there. Like myself. I live two blocks from there.
Do you really? You live right there in the area. It was wonderful. And I love that there were so many people there to show their love for Zanies and hang out with each other. There was great food. There was so much cake. Cool.
Mm-hmm. I've never hugged so many comics in my life.
I know. I think Kevin Bozeman wouldn't let go. He was so excited to see me. And I'm like, Kevin, we just saw each other a few weeks ago. But it was so festive.
Everyone was festive.
Mike Preston and Skip Gripparis. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Kelsey Huff was there. And managers from... Oh, the manager... I don't know if you guys met the manager from the Zanies in Nashville, Brian Dorfman was there.
Oh, no,
I didn't
haven't.
Actually.
I'm sorry. I should have probably said something.
That would
something.
Actually have been a good... Yeah, thank
Bert
you.
Bert Haas, of course, was there. Barb Hewitt, who's one of the owners. And
no Barb.
Yeah, one of the silent owners was there. I didn't want to tell you who he was because, I don't know, he just seems to kind of like to be on the periphery of things.
I think now, I knew he was just based on his reactions to everything.
Probably. Now, Paul, you emailed me. You have developed a couple segments for the show, including What's Paul Eating? Which, you know.
Yeah.
I know you love that one.
Interesting. Is It a Law? Trump Calls.
Trump Calls.
It wasn't Trump Dumps. Oh, You've Been Trumped?
You've Been Trumped. The name's been changed quite some
times. Yeah, a couple times. Yeah, so a couple of different segments.
And Patty's appalling. I kind of contributed to that.
Oh, no doubt. Patty's appalling lack of musical knowledge.
We got to keep it light.
We're not dropping that segment, 301. We're just not doing it tonight. Someone was like, we're not dropping it.
Which one?
Patty's appalling lack of
musical knowledge. That's a keeper.
No, that's it's got a very long title. Now, you have a new segment you want to introduce tonight. And I think this is actually really touching and sweet because we are comedians and people always think that we're always happy and in a good mood. And that whole idea of like the dark side of the clown. No, it's just that we always have to be on.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I just feel like we need to check in with each other. And I know it takes a lot of time out of your day sometime. You're very busy, but you should just check in with people and just make sure everything's okay. So I thought a segment would be nice that we would just call in to some of our fellow friends and just and make sure everything's okay. It's called Everything Zen.
Everything Zen?
Everything Zen, yeah. I think we have music that we created for the segment, too. Sammy, do you got it?
Get some music. This is Everything Zen?
Yeah. So.
That's not very relaxing. I would think it's like more relaxing music.
I think it sets the tone.
I don't know. We have on the line with us our first Everything Zen.
First contestant, yeah.
It's not a game, though.
That's right. It's just checking in.
This is just checking
better
in.
Win.
On the line with us is the one and only Jeannie Dugan.
Hey, Jeannie.
Hey, Jeannie.
Hey, Jeannie.
Hey.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Patty. Hey, everyone. Hi.
We just want to check. Is everything okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Thanks for asking. Oh. I appreciate that.
That's great.
That is
I'm
great.
Okay.
Hey, Jeannie. Oh, cool. Where can people find out more about you?
Hey, I would love if they checked out my website, jeanniedugan.com, and that's D-O-O-G-A-N. That would make me even better, I think.
Okay,
that's what makes everyone mentally healthy. Just checking out their website.
Just checking in. Yeah,
great. I wish I had more.
Okay, thanks, Jeannie. We're just checking in.
Thank you, Jeannie.
All right. Well,
hey.
Thanks.
Thanks for checking in with me.
Jeannie's okay.
Did I win?
Yes. She wins.
Sure.
She wins our love and adoration.
Yeah,
forever.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for letting me be your first check-in. I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah, no problem. So, we'll just keep going, I guess.
All right, let's do another check-in when we come back.
Yeah, let's check in with somebody else.
All right, let's see who we got when we come back. You're listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. It's the new segment launched by comedian Paul Farvar Esquire, Everything Zen. James Vickery is enjoying it so far. More in a moment. Ooh, Bee Gees, Stayin' Alive. Ooh, ooh.
Right? That's good. Yeah, you're correct.
Stayin' Alive. Patty's appalling lack of musical knowledge, notwithstanding. I, I do know this one, James Vickery. I know one.
I appreciate it.
Paul Farvar has launched a new segment. You can also hear him regularly as one of the Nightside hosts.
Yeah.
Do you have another show coming up soon?
We had to reschedule. I don't have a date set right now, but if you go to Paul F. Comedy, I'd put those on my website.
Excellent. So we can go to Paul F. Comedy. James Vickery in studio with us as well, fellow comedian. What's your website, James?
James Vickery Comedy. I've switched it a couple times.
I've done the same thing. I know.
You want to make it hard for people
exactly.
to find you.
I love how he visualized it first. He was like,
I really did have to picture it.
What did I do with my website? So Paul has launched a new segment. Tell us a little more about this, Paul.
It's called Everything Zen. It's just, you know, checking in with people. And
I love it.
I know it takes a lot of time. Like I said, everyone's busy, but, you know, put aside like 5 to 10 minutes of your time to check in with people. Let's do another round of it. Can we get the intro music?
Everything Zen. All right, Everything Zen. This is just not a Zen type of song.
Well, you know, it's got the lyrics which are consistent with the name of the game. So I figured. The segment, I should say. It's not a game. There's no winners.
It correlates.
Yeah. Okay.
It does. It correlates.
We're all winners.
Let's see how our friend Marty DeRose is doing. Take it away. Hey, Marty.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hey, Marty. Is everything okay?
Yeah. Thanks for checking.
Great. Where can people find out more about you, Marty?
Oh, man. You can follow me at Marty DeRosa on all the social media platforms. And vote for me for WGN's Kid of the Week.
We're so glad you're okay, and everyone vote for him for Kid of the Week. Thank you, Marty.
You're really okay?
I think he sounds like he's really okay. Do you want to know more, Paul?
No, I'm just glad he's okay.
All right. Thank you, Marty. We'll talk to you again soon. We're going to have him on this. He got me hooked on some docuseries that I have to have a talk with him about not telling me scary things at night.
Yeah, it's not good time to watch documentaries late at night about mystery or stuff because it makes it hard. You got to keep it light. Like I said, you watch shows like Mork and Mindy, Webster.
Okay, these are the shows that Paul binge watches, by the way.
I fall asleep to them. Welcome Back, Amazing. Cotter.
That reminds me, there was a list of the most binge watched shows of 2018.
Really?
And I'm pretty sure that I binge watch. I mean, like, I think I'm responsible for at least one of those series being watched over and over and over and over again. There's one series that you would not think someone could keep watching from every angle and want to know more about it. You know what show
I'm
it is.
I'm so curious.
I know what it is.
Wait, Friends?
No, it's an hour-long drama. It is the series The Haunting of Hill House.
Oh, I would never guess that.
What'd you think? What'd you think it was Cobra show. Kai? Did you think it was? I watched that a lot too.
I still haven't watched that. I thought it was going to be. I really thought it was going to be Alf. To be honest with you,
Patty, I thought that show was so great.
The
Haunting of Hill House.
It's incredible.
I really did.
Oh, I can't even begin to tell you how much that has like worked its way into my brain. I just because it's as scary of a family drama as it is
exactly
a haunted series. Here are the top 10 most binge watch shows on Netflix. At least it's On My Block. Have you guys even heard of this?
I don't know that one. That's weird.
Yeah, I've never heard of On My Block. Making a Murderer Part 2
yep.
is one of the
heard
most...
Heard of that.
13
I love
reasons,
the start of it.
You love the start of it? The 13 Reasons Why Season 2.
Mm-hmm.
Last Chance U Indie. See, I've never heard a lot. Sammy, have you heard of a couple of these? Last Chance
U. I know Last Chance U is college
about
football.
It. No chance.
number 5 is Bodyguard, which is a British series.
Oh,
that,
loved it.
Wasn't that great?
It was so good.
Did not see that coming.
Me neither.
Okay.
How did they do that again with.
It's not the same thing.
Oh.
Nope. It's not Kevin Costner esque.
It is not Kevin Costner. Although, I mean, like.
It could be.
It could be, yes. It's incredible.
I loved it.
I really enjoyed it. Number 6 is Fastest Car.
Don't know that one.
Not familiar. Number 7 is my series, The Haunting of Hill House,
yep.
which I loved. Number 8 is Anne with an E, Season 2.
I don't know that either.
And number 9 is Insatiable. I've never heard of that one. A lot of these, I wonder if this is international. These are some of the series that are the most binge-watched series on Netflix. And number 10 is Orange is the New Black, Season 6.
I'm behind that.
I don't know. There you go.
What if I told you I didn't know not one of those?
Not one of these. Do you have Netflix?
I'm not much of a Netflix guy. I'm an Xfinity guy.
Oh.
Let's see. So are there... But see,
I don't have Netflix
either. I've stopped watching things after Cheers.
What?
I'm just kidding.
I was going to say.
I watched Cheers again.
Cheers is good.
It still holds up.
It does.
I watched the whole all seasons, and then now I'm doing that with Barney Miller,
wow,
which also holds up.
Really?
Really good show. I didn't watch it as a kid, but...
I did not think Barney Miller would hold up.
Holds up.
You know,
they covered a lot of things ahead of their time. Sorry, Patty.
No, I agree with you.
And if you talk to police officers, they say that Barney Miller is the most realistic of all the shows that are.
That is a great show. Bar none, it's one of the best cop shows. Well, there were so many great, gritty, but funny shows in the 70s. So you think, he's right, James. They would address things that we don't even touch on anymore.
They cover, this show is like the ones that I've been watching. I go to bed to it and then I work.
So how do you watch it? What do you watch
it's on? They play it on MeTV and Antenna TV.
You just
record them on my DVR Infinity like Sammy. And you just watch them. And then they talk about gay rights. They talk about women's rights. They talk about racial tensions, mm-hmm, police brutality.
Wow.
The safety of police officers comes up quite often. All these things are... and there was a lot of political stuff that came up, too, back then. Corruption.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they were fearless, it seems like. I mean, now that you have all these streaming services, I think Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu pick up where the series were kind of. That's why television is such a draw for writers and actors, because they're telling the stories that you can't, mm-hmm, necessarily do on broadcast television.
Well, a lot of those shows are being revisited again. I know Cheers has gotten big again because now Netflix opened it up again. Not so much Webster.
I don't understand.
It's a show that
I can't wrap my mind around why you love Webster.
I like it. Like it because it's so bad. They don't. There's so many mistakes on the show. And it's like they didn't have time. Like, let's just go with it.
Sammy, are you familiar with any of the shows that we're talking about, like Webster and Alf or Barney Miller?
Do you see me looking down at my
favorites? I know. Small Wonder. I was like, Small Wonder. Okay.
Wonder Years
was great.
Punky Brewster. Nobody?
Sam looks so confused.
As my family would say, forget about it.
Forget about it.
That's, Sammy's 22.
Wow. Yeah.
I can't.
I don't understand.
1996 was when you were born?
Bada beam, bada boom.
Would you?
Wow. I was already arrested twice by then. No, I'm just kidding. Just once.
By the way, one of our listeners, Sammy, says that Amazon Prime now has video that is played on Xfinity, and I've been watching Tom Clancy's Jack Ryan series. I really enjoyed that series. Mm. With John, what's his name?
Krasinski.
Thank you so much, Don. It's so funny. I was like, hey, is Don around? Hey, Don.
Hi.
So did you watch Jack Ryan on Prime?
No, not yet, but I would like to. I like those Jack Ryan movies and shows.
I was really surprised at how much I enjoyed it. And by the way, one of the actors that I love from The Haunting of Hill House, Timothy Hutton, is on the Jack Ryan series on Amazon Prime. Timothy Hutton is incredible on The Haunting of Hill
House. Yes, he really is.
I haven't seen him in that, but he still is one of my favorite actors.
Of all time.
Just from a lot of his movies that he did in the 80s. Ordinary People is one of my favorite movies of all time. He won an Academy Award for that. And what was that movie he was in? This Is Not America. It was that was the name of the song that was on it.
There's a movie called Taps with him and George C. Scott where it's a boys' military boarding school. Actually, Tom Cruise and Sean Penn are in that one, too.
Really?
I'm going to go back and watch a lot
of these. The movie I'm talking about is with Sean Penn.
Falcon and the Snowman.
Yeah. He was great in
that,
too.
That's incredible. Yeah, they're drug dealers.
Such a good movie, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to have to make a movie list for Sammy, I think. I think Ordinary People. And by the way, do you think Ordinary People is a holiday movie? It happens around... Doesn't it happen around
it does, but I don't think it is.
Sammy's...
Die Hard is. I'm just kidding.
Let's talk about this when we come back. More in a moment on 720 WGN. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. All right, boys. Tell me what song this is. Quick. Who's going to win? Paul James. Don, do you know?
I don't. I can dance to it, but
I have no idea. I only know because it's on my screen.
Yeah, it's a no for me either. It's got a beat to it.
Look at this. He's giving you a hint through the window. That's the last letter of the group.
X ambassadors.
The last letter.
X.
DMX.
DMX.
You are. You are listening to WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are not playing Patty's appalling lack of musical knowledge because it's just fun that you don't know anything tonight, Paul. I'm enjoying it tremendously.
I was told I wasn't going to have to use my musical brain today. But we know who knows the least about.
Yes, no, there's no doubt about it.
At this round table there's of no, comedians.
I'm looking at all the like all the choices for music on my screen right now, and I'm like, I can't even imagine like any, like, you know, I don't know, like cult.
When we do it again, when we play the game again, I've got stuff that's going to... Well, first of all, we need to have you play against another musician. I think that'll be fun.
Against a musician? Why would I play against
because
a musician?
I think you would do well against certain on certain things. Like, look at Sammy here. He knows a lot about music, but if you played him Pat Benatar, he wouldn't know who he was. And you know,
he did you say he who he was?
No, I said Pat Sammy wouldn't know who Pat who Benatar she was. Is, yeah. Yes. Oh, sorry.
So, Pat, who would be one of your favorite
artists? Pat Benatar would be with. Yeah. Okay. Although I didn't, I told you I only knew two, and then you played a third, and I couldn't. I didn't know what it was.
Shelly knows
is,
two.
We belong and love is a battlefield. And what was it? Hit me with your best shot.
You couldn't hit. Which is even bigger.
Which is really sad. By the way, before I forget, I'm going to, pardon me. Can you cut that out of the podcast? I am going to record a promo in just a little bit with Sammy because I have something really exciting to share with everyone tomorrow. I didn't have a chance to mention this last week. I also wanted to give Nick DiGilio an opportunity to talk to you guys about it first. And I'm sure he did last night. But, Nick and I had the incredible opportunity to sit down with filmmaker Robert Zemeckis last week.
Wow.
We were at a screening of Welcome to Marwen, and it is a movie that I have to see again. I just get the chills thinking about it. And then we sat down and talked to him, and I had to work really hard. Oh, I had to work really hard not to geek out. Nick asked wonderful questions. It was a great back and forth, and it was such an honor to not only interview Robert Zemeckis, but interview him with Nick DiGilio. So we'll both be airing the interview. I'm planning on airing mine tomorrow. I gave Nick all the audio. I'm like, whatever you want to do. I just know how much Nick loves Robert Zemeckis and all of his films. And if there's one thing, you know how you don't... You wish you had superpowers and you always think I would fly or I'd be invisible. Every once in a while, I have the opportunity to make my friends happy. Mm. And there is no better feeling than that. And seeing the smile on Nick's face and the enthusiasm and the passion he has for the movies of Robert Zemeckis was great. And of course, I'm a big fan, but not to the extent, my knowledge of his cinematic.
I would still fly, but... Mine's
making my friends happy. Yeah,
he knows. He has such a vast knowledge of all movies. Yeah. To be honest, but that movie looks really good.
I have to tell you, if you're not familiar with the documentary Marwen Call, Beaten and Left for Art, it's about a man who was beaten nearly to death outside of a bar for a reason that I think you'll learn either obviously watching the documentary, you'll learn about it a different way seeing the film Welcome to Marwen, and it is it's heartbreaking and beautiful. It is just, there was a moment I was telling Robert Zemeckis and Nick, there was something that I thought was about to go wrong. And I told Nick, I was like, I was pretty sure I wasn't going to be able to handle it. Yeah. Like, I've never felt, I didn't want to scream in front of Nick. But I felt like I was on the verge of devastation for this character and for these other characters that are within the story. But what it reminded me of and something that,
don't give it away.
No, this is just for me that it taught me watching this. I hadn't really, maybe in my life has occurred to me, but there are people who want to be artists, people who think, oh, I want to be famous, or they see someone else, maybe like in comedy, right? You see someone doing comedy and you think, I want to do that because you saw somebody else doing it. And then there are people who need to, and no matter what, their soul finds a way to express that. Right, whether it's, you know, it's something, an art form that's going to be shared, or if it's just for yourself in order to connect with your world. And that's what this movie is about.
Like Gallagher's cousin.
Correct. Yes, I think that would be, it's a manifest some way. Yeah.
Is this the breakout movie for Steve Carell then? Like, do you think it's going to be like
a movie?
I
don't know about that. I think
like
it's a beautiful
Forrest
film.
Gump was for Tom Hanks?
I thought Big was, what are you talking about?
Well, yeah, I mean, right? In terms of, was a great, come on. That's
he was nominated for that.
For Big?
Yes, he was nominated for Big, yeah.
Nominated for what?
That's great.
Yeah.
Nominated for
Best Actor.
Oscar.
I'm 90% sure that Tom Hanks was nominated
but
for
that.
Big.
Listen, I think Tom Hanks's best work was Bosom Buddies, but we're not.
I have to agree with you.
On Family Ties, the brother.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was on it in multiple episodes, alcohol, and then also for when he was wanted by the police.
Yes, exactly.
Or for the FBI.
I love that character.
Can't believe you're making me look at
and also,
a list of awards.
Another good show to binge on, Family Ties. Doesn't hold up, but still a good show for sleeping patterns, binging.
Which one?
Family Ties.
I love Family Ties.
So
it's
good.
Great. It's growing pains, but it doesn't hold up.
Family Ties holds up better.
That was the other thing. The first time I met Robert Zemeckis was I've been friends with his wife Leslie Zemeckis in such a wonderful and strange twist of fate. Michelle L'Amour, who is a regular on the show, asked me one night. She goes, "Hey, I have a friend who wrote this book that I think you'd really enjoy. Can she come on your show?" And I was like, "Sure." And she came in. She's like, "This is my friend Leslie Zemeckis." I'm like, "Oh, hi, Leslie. Nice to meet you." And I went to the book reading and everything. And then someone said, "Hey," and it was so weird because someone raised their hand and wanted to ask her a question about her husband. And I was like, "Is that okay?" I didn't assume. I mean, Zemeckis could be, you know. So that was how I got to know Leslie Zemeckis.
Oh, wow.
And she brought her husband into the studio one time.
Yeah.
And I had to act all cool, like, "Hey, Bob. Hi, yeah, sir. Hi, how are you doing?" He was in the studio the entire time I interviewed her about her book, Tiger, Tiger.
Wow.
And before he left, I had to say, I just want you to know I've worked really hard not to geek out. And you ruined my life by making me fall in love with Michael J. Fox. So, Since I was a kid, I was obsessed with him.
Yeah.
It was the only fan letter I ever wrote. Well,
really?
No, I wrote two. I wrote one to Svengoolie and one to... And Svengoolie wrote me back, and Michael J. Fox did not.
So, wait, was that Alex B. Keaton?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so there you go. I got to focus here. So, the interview with Robert Zemeckis will air tomorrow. We recorded it last week, and it was such a wonderful experience have the opportunity to interview Robert Zemeckis with Nick DiGilio. And I also want to, before I forget, I said I was going to talk about Christmas movies that are set at Christmas times but aren't necessarily Christmas themed. Now, you were saying that Die Hard, James, that Die Hard is a Christmas movie?
I would be in the camp that it is.
Okay. Paul, what do you think?
I don't have a strong opinion about it other than if people ask me.
What? Not that university.
I don't have a strong opinion about it other than I would tend to agree. Like, my thoughts are, if people ask me what are some popular Christmas movies, I always think of that because you know it was during Christmas. So I don't know what other. I haven't seen any of the ones that were in black and white. So,
oh boy. So I
Christmas Story.
So my husband says that
black and white.
That the other Christmas movie that if people are going to say Die Hard, he wants to know why they don't say Lethal Weapon as also as a Christmas movie. It all happens at Christmas time. Remember?
Does it?
Yeah. Okay. Mel Gibson makes that drug bust in the Christmas tree sales lot.
Mm.
Right. There's like all the decorations.
I haven't seen that movie since it was in the theaters.
And Sammy's like, "Please don't ask me if I saw it. Please don't ask me if I saw it." Yes, I would contend that
I didn't know that Robert Zemeckis made Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Yeah, Used Cars, Forrest Gump.
Used Cars was a good movie.
Another one that is on the list of greats.
1941.
Yes. I'm sorry that I didn't have a chance to invite you to the interview, Paul. You're going to love... Oh, by the way, and then...
I wouldn't know. I don't know a lot about him.
By the way, Nick is also doing a screening of Welcome to Marwen this Saturday night at the Rosemont AMC. So he'll do like a kind of like one of those movie clubs, but it'll be on this Saturday. So, Paul, are you out of town?
I'll be in Florida.
James,
at McCurdy's.
You and Kristen want to come with
Kristen
me?
Kristen might. Are you going?
Yes, I'm going to be
really?
There. Yeah, I'll be at the Rosemont AMC.
Oh.
Sammy, you want to go? Do you have any interest in seeing the movie?
I'd love to go. Come on.
All right, let's go do that. We're gonna hang out with Nick and see Welcome to Marwen this
I want to see the movie. I guarantee you I'll see it. When I'm in Florida, there's nothing to do with my my nephew and two nieces.
Wait, where in Florida?
Sarasota.
Okay.
I'm going to be I'm performing at McCurdy's there for a week, so I'll be excited and then hang out with my nieces and nephew.
That's
the Gingers, the Persian Gingers.
Persians.
It's always lovely to see how, you know, obviously decades and generations of DNA present themselves. I have a niece who is Korean and Irish and German.
Wow.
So for those who are like, well, how come you're my... So I have half siblings, mm-hmm. and my Irish German sister had married a Japanese man, and that's my niece and my nephew. Ooh, I should probably tell you, you've got two, but she's got green eyes. So it's wow. She looks Asian, but she's got green eyes. Yeah.
My sister-in-law's redheaded. My dad had red hair when he had hair. And so the kids all come out with red hair.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful kids, so...
When I was a kid, I wished I had red hair and blue eyes.
I did too.
Did you ever have like something
hair.
Like you wanted blonde hair?
I bleached my hair with the sun in, mm-hmm. but it came out orange.
Oh yeah, that happened to a lot of people. But you
I
have like
run in with sun well, in.
Yeah, dark haired people. We couldn't do anything.
Yeah,
about
we didn't
it.
Know. No one yeah. told me that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Unfortunately,
I didn't know you at the time.
I wanted to be able to fly.
That was it. Like Gallagher's cousin.
We wind down here at WGN Radio. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez.
Do you know who this is, Patty?
No, I do not know. Do you know who this
I
is?
I do.
Oh. Well, then are you appalled by my lack of musical knowledge
I
in this
I am not.
Instance?
Nothing will appall me.
All right. James, are you familiar with who this is?
I am.
Rhymes with Iggy.
Mm-hmm.
Iggy. Ziggy.
Biggie.
Biggie. Notorious. B-I-G. What?
Mm-hmm.
Biggie Smalls.
Sorry, Patty. I just
also
wanted
Conor McGregor's theme song.
There you go.
Yeah, I want to go off of that.
Just to give you an update again, that interview with Robert Zemeckis, Nick DiGilio and I sat down with Robert Zemeckis, and that interview on my show will air tomorrow night. I'll also be checking in with Renato Mariotti. He's a CNN legal analyst, and I'm sure there will be news continuing throughout the week. And of course, we don't really cover anything about the president unless it's Friday, but there are people in the periphery. Do you, as a lawyer, because he was a federal prosecutor.
He was.
Do you follow like some of these stories where Michael Flynn's, you know, business associates have now been indicted as well? You know, the Bettina story.
I do follow some of it. I like the legal aspects of it. I still follow the law, even though I'm not practicing full time anymore. It's still fascinating to me.
Hold on. Nick D's coming in real quick. I was just telling the audience about this the interview and seeing welcome
Zemeckis.
To Marwin. Yes. Yes. Hey, Nick. Come on in.
You're running the interview tomorrow.
Is that all right?
So am I.
Okay.
So if people miss, what time are you running it?
I'm running it at, I think we're going to start at 11. We might start it at midnight. Well, I'll as early as possible.
We're doing it at 1:30.
Okay, yeah.
So
it'll probably be
if
around
if people miss it, they can hear it on my show.
Yeah.
So it'll be on it at 1:30.
Yeah, and so tell people about the viewing of the show, the movie on Saturday, too.
Oh, I'm hosting a screening of Welcome to Marwin at the AMC Rosemont 18. It's the 7:10 showing.
Yeah,
and I'm going to introduce it, and we'll do a little film club thing and talk about it afterwards. What's really going to be funny is the people who actually just show up to see the movie, and then there's an idiot with a microphone. You know, I had no idea. They were just picking the random 7:10 right. showing, and then there's an idiot in front of the screen going,
do
so this is Robert
any
Zemeckis.
Movie.
Yeah, this is just this is a service we do at the Rosemont.
Or what if it's someone who hasn't been to a movie in a while and they're like, wait, is this what happens?
This is what happens at movies now. That's a Rosemont thing. It just happens in Rosemont. But yeah, no, I mean, I love the movie so much. And, you know,
so
and Mike, you know,
I've never seen it.
It's great. Mike Kurz, who helped me put together the film club and who is over, he's a manager out there at the AMC. As soon as he heard that we met with Zemeckis and we interviewed him and that we love the movie, he's like, well, let's do a screening of it. Let you come down and host a screening of it. I'm like, all right, cool. Any so that would be that we're counting this as number 6 of Zemeckis Fest.
Yes,
that's awesome.
Because we did 5 other movies directed by Robert Zemeckis all summer long. Each one of my monthly film clubs, we did a Zemeckis movie.
Yeah,
and Used Cars.
Used Cars kicked it off.
Nice.
We did Used Cars, Back to the Future, Forrest Gump, I Want to Hold Your Hand, Back to the Future Part 3, and then now Welcome to Marwin.
Yeah,
for
which doesn't come out till Friday. I believe maybe late Thursday.
Comes out
night.
Friday, yeah.
Friday,
yeah.
And it's hard to describe, and I don't think it's being marketed as well as you.
No, it's not.
No, it's because it's
a hard movie to market, though. I mean, even, you know, when we talked when we talked to Zemeckis, you know, he even said it's a hard movie to describe and but it's a beautiful film. I mean, it really is, and it's so entertaining. And Carell is tremendous in it. It's a great performance, and I'm excited to see it again on Saturday.
I was telling the audience about and telling you and Robert Zemeckis about. I really thought I wasn't going to be able to make it if that tragic moment did occur. Yeah. I was like, don't scream in front of him.
Well, there's a lot of. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like it's
the tension's unbelievable.
Yeah, and there's a lot of tragedy in the movie.
Yeah.
That this person has to heal from, and that's basically what the movie's about. But it's also, you know, and again, I don't want to make it sound like it's a maudlin sad movie, because it's not. There's a lot of joy in it.
Yeah,
it's really
adventure.
Celebratory, and it's really exciting. Like,
yes.
Really, the action sequences are amazing, and the special effects are top notch.
It's a lot like Forrest Gump was like that too. If you think about it, it was hard to. When you went in, you don't know what you were going to go.
That's true. That's
well, a lot of, you know, Zemeckis has this way of making really, really complicated movies, you know, but when you're watching them, they seem simple.
Mm.
Like, he's got this knack to write these screenplays. He and his ex-writing partner, Bob Gale, wrote a bunch of screenplays that are just so complicated and have so many conflicts, and yet every single moment's not wasted. Like, if you look at Back to the Future is a perfect screenplay.
It is.
It's a perfect screenplay. Everything that's set up, there's a payoff for. Everything. And you know, they went a little crazy with Back to the Future Part 2.
Sure.
With so many complications and everything. But they fixed it all at the end. That's the thing. And
right.
And so, no matter how far away you think you're getting from the plot in a Robert Zemeckis movie, it all counts.
It does. Yeah.
All counts.
Yeah.
And that's the same with this. And he co-wrote this one with Carolyn Thompson, who... wrote Edward Scissorhands.
I was trying to figure that out, and I was trying to explain that Edward Scissorhands to my son, and now we have to watch that because
it's a great movie.
It is.
Yeah,
that is a good movie.
It is. It was incredible to be able to interview Robert Zemeckis with you.
One of my heroes.
So much.
I mean,
fun.
Truly one of my heroes.
Yeah.
And it was an honor to meet him, and he was so nice.
Wasn't he?
That's call
awesome.
Me Bob.
Yeah.
All right, I'll call you Bob.
I know. It was surreal. It was surreal.
So anyway, I wanted to let you know that I'll be playing it at 1:30. So if people miss it on your show, they can hear it on my show. If they hear it on your show, then they can hear it on my show a second time.
Exactly. It's all going to be there for everybody.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much,
all
Nick.
Right. See you
Thank
guys.
You. I'll see you in a bit.
See you, Nick.
And Nick is coming up next, of course. Let me take a break here, and we're going to throw it over to... Let's give him a chance to get back to his studio before I rush out of here. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Podcasts everywhere.
Podcasts.
A huge collection of topics all in one place. All with one search.
What's going on with WGN Plus?
The realm of comedy is a difficult space to be in right now, but I'd say it's more important than ever. Comedian Monique stopped by to catch up with Shypedia in her struggle with experiencing inequality with Netflix. Rebel Force Radio took some time to listen to the people and answer listener questions. And John Cass has a not-so-popular perspective on Christmas lights. Look them up. WGN Plus on iTunes and Google Play.
Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us. I'll be back tomorrow night. Renato Mariotti joins us, and now I'm almost wondering if I should do the Robert Zemeckis audio on Wednesday, so Nick runs his first. I don't know. I'll figure it all out in post.
No, it's fine. The way you guys have it spaced out, seems like it'll work out good.
All right. This was so much fun. It's time now for us to turn it over. Thank you, James Vickery and Paul Farvar, for joining us tonight. James, maybe you can come in again this week or
Absolutely.
Before you leave town with Kristen.
Yeah, please.
That would be a blast. Comedian Paul Farvar, go to paulfcomedy.com. Go to jamesvickerycomedy.com.
Nice memory.
Information. And, of course, thank you, Rebecca Halpern, for joining us tonight as well. Tommy Davidson, who is at the Improv in Schaumburg. Go to chicago.improv.com for more information on the showtimes.